But it's time now for our press review. I'm joined in the studio now by Leo McGuinn for our press review. We are starting in the Middle East and the news that the ICC, Leo, could be preparing an arrest warrant against prominent Israeli and also Hamas officials, including Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. What's going on?
Yeah, well, I'll start by showing you the Times of Israel this morning. They say that Israel, alongside the US, are working against the clock to prevent any such arrest warrant against Prime Minister Netanyahu. One analyst says that the PM is under unusual stress over the potential warrant, with Netanyahu leading a non-stop push over the telephone to stop it happening. His latest public statement said it could set a dangerous precedent. Haaretz have this analysis, a piece saying that the Israeli government is working under the assumption that the ICC's prosecutor, Karim Khan, will this week issue warrants for the arrest of Netanyahu, Defence Minister Yoav Gallant and IDF Chief of Staff Herzi Halevi. The ICC is the world's only permanent international court with the power to prosecute individuals accused of war crimes. It relies on its 124 members, which includes most European countries, but crucially not Israel or the US, to arrest those named in such warrants. According to one expert, the issuing of arrest warrants could lead to moves against Israel, like an arms embargo or economic sanctions. And one professor said that the belligerent statements by Israeli politicians so far have really not helped the Israeli cause.
Well, staying now with the war in Gaza, university campuses across the United States have been seeing pro-Palestinian protests, also sit-ins over the past few weeks. How is the American press covering those protests, Leo?
Yeah, this is the New York Times. College protests deepen democratic rifts. They say that the chaos unfolding on campuses across the country is stoking internal division within the Democratic Party, which is even more notable considering it's, of course, an election year. There's a split over how to balance free speech with concerns that some Jewish Americans are raising about anti-Semitism. The Democrats have often tried to portray themselves as a steady hand, but that image is in danger of being tarnished by the internal division. Somewhere that's been a hot spot for such protests has been Texas, and specifically the University of Austin. And this piece is from Texas's biggest paper, Austin American Statesman, argue that the protests are never going to be models of good behaviour. They invoke the famous line, "Well-behaved women seldom make history." Effective demonstrations are loud, provocative, and designed to discomfort. This piece finishes by saying it remains to be seen if pro-Palestinian demonstrations will upend Israeli military policy in Gaza. But given the fashion behind the protests, fidelity to good behaviour isn't likely to factor into the demonstrators' tactics. I'll bring you some Israeli press to finish. This is Ynet, who have this headline. Protests show dark side of multiculturalism. They say that pro-Palestinian Western intellectuals regard Israel as convenient means by which to clear their sinful colonial conscience. They're afraid of attacking human rights, trampling powers such as China, and therefore view lashing out as Israel as an opportunity to be seen as enlightened.
And Leo, the US isn't the only country experiencing these mass campus protests at the moment. Demonstrations at Sciences Po, right here in Paris, wound down on Friday. Students reached an agreement in that case with the university. How has the French press been treating this story?
Yeah, I'll start with Le Figaro. They have this headline on their front page this morning. Sciences Po bows in the face of Islamist leftist pressure. The school administration has agreed to hold a public meeting on Thursday in which elected officials will respond to questions from their constituents. The right and extreme right have denounced the uni's capitulation. This article says that the silent majority believe that the management gave in to the blackmail of a few dozen militants. L'Opinion, for its part, accuses the elite factory, that is Sciences Po, of going off the rails. The current crisis, it claims, is due to France Unbowed's desire to import the Israeli-Palestinian conflict into the European election campaign. Le Nouvel Obs have this piece describing how the university became a cauldron. They say this is nothing new. Sciences Po has a tradition of protests and clashes. In fact, the 70s saw extremely violent confrontations between the students' union and the far right. So this isn't the first time this has happened at the elite university.
Well, let's move now to Iraq, where a bill has been passed criminalising same-sex relationships with jail terms of between 10 and 15 years. Unsurprisingly, on the international scene, this news has been widely criticised.
Yeah, The Guardian reporting that news this morning. They note that the law also enables courts to sentence trans people to 3 years in prison. The move has been condemned as an attack on human rights. The US State Department said it was a threat to human rights and would weaken Iraq's ability to diversify its economy and attract foreign investment, whereas Human Rights Watch have called the new law change a horrific development and an attack on human rights. I want to move on from this story, but I'll stay in Iraq and bring you the tragic death of Fahad, who was a TikTok star. She was shot dead on Friday outside her home. A viral sensation, Fahad had 460,000 followers. Her video showed her wearing tight or revealing clothing or singing and cuddling her young son. She often drew the ire of conservatives in Iraqi society and in the government, which has led many to speculate as to why she was assassinated. The 30-year-old had previously been sentenced to 90 days in jail for dancing at her six-year-old son's birthday. She's actually the third young social media star to be killed in the country in less than a year, which appears to be a symptom of an Iraqi clampdown on the public display as behaviours regarded as Western or secular. Speaking at her funeral, Fahad's brother said he had no faith that the killer would be caught.
OK, well, Leah, let's change gears completely now for your final story. A story of the youngest 101-year-old in the world. Tell us more.
Yeah, this is the story of Patricia. You can see her smiling there in The Guardian this morning. 101 years old, but as you say, maybe the youngest 101-year-old ever, as she's regularly mistaken for just 1 year old. That is, whenever she flies. She's born in 1922, but the American airline system doesn't recognise that year, so it defaults to 2022 instead. On one occasion, Patricia was left without her reserved wheelchair at a terminal because airport staff had expected a baby instead. The trouble started when she reached 100, that magical century, when the system apparently unable to compute. Despite all the trouble, she said she was looking forward to her next flight in autumn, by which time she'll be 102. But that's not bad. You know, she looks pretty good for 101, I'd say. So maybe not one, but
she looks pretty bad for one. Yeah, my one-year-old looked like that, I'd be concerned.
Pretty good for 101.
Leah McGuinn with today's International Press Review. Thank you very much.